You know, we have real concerns over how this project is being developed and proposed. Specifically, it has to do with the use of eminent domain.
So the New England Power Generators Association paid Polycon an undisclosed fee for a private independent study. The results were released Monday at this press conference. The study concludes Northern Pass would create 533 jobs at the most. And in terms of jobs per transmission mile, the North Country loses.
We see northern New Hampshire as capturing many fewer of the overall job benefits than the rest of the state.
While many construction jobs would be created, Polycon's study says New Hampshire simply doesn't have enough specialized labor to support the project, so out-of-state workers would be brought in for converter and substation work.
Converter stations, extremely specialized work. Three companies worldwide do that.
And that's Amy Covino's report, a portion of it that aired on WMUR News, and you can find out more at WMUR.com, and that helps to kick off the discussion here today on Bulldog Live on the Pulse at 1-866-823-1077 is our phone number right here on Bulldog Live, and we have quite a bit of things to get to. This is the day before the House Bill 648, eminent domain bill that we talked about in great detail yesterday. And this is your very last chance to call your state senators, to email them, call them, whatever it is you wish, however you wish to communicate with them, to say, please stand up for property rights and support the Forrester-Bragdon Amendment. And that anything Jeb Bradley puts forward, well, treat that one as if it were the bubonic plague. 1-866-823-1077 here on Bulldog Live. We'll talk a little bit more about what the amendments are that Jeb Bradley has proposed and why they are poison to property rights. But first, let's get to the topic that we just heard about here, and that is the Northern Pass project. They have talked about how many jobs would be created, and the question has always been lingering out there, and I've been asking this for some time, too. How many of those would be New Hampshire jobs? And, you know, if we look at any particularly wind farm development projects around New Hampshire, we see that most of that work comes from out-of-staters clearing the land, building the towers, and the like. So why would Northern Pass be any different, particularly if it's a Hydro-Quebec project? Aren't they going to import their own workers? Well, a detailed study has been done, a study put forth by the New England Power Generators Association. We have a couple of people here to discuss the details of that project. Sandy Hennequin, she is joining us now from the New England Power Generators Association. Good morning, Sandy.
Hi, good morning.
And we have Jim Monahan from the DuPont Group joining us here as well, which is where the press conference was held yesterday. Good morning.
Great. Good morning, Brian.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the conclusions of the study, and we'll find out how you got to that. So whoever wants to go first.
Sure, I'll jump right in. Obviously,
pull that microphone a little bit closer to you too. No problem.
Obviously, the issue of jobs is really a large issue, and so we commissioned the study, I guess, a couple of months ago. We envisioned it would be part of the DOE process, and then there's been so much debate over the last couple of weeks and leading into the vote on Wednesday that we thought it would be helpful to make sure that this study was out there and all of this information. And what we found, which isn't really a surprise, is that the job growth really is going to be substantially, we believe, less than what has been estimated by those that the supporters of Northern Pass, and that a lot of the jobs will be jobs that are really out-of-state workers coming in, because a lot of the specialization that's necessary for this type of project, there's only a couple of companies that really do that and have those workers. And unfortunately, a lot of those workers aren't workers that live in New Hampshire.
I got it. And Jim, you know, one question that comes to my mind is, you know, those steel towers aren't even going to be built in New Hampshire that I can tell.
Right. I think it's kind of a dense report, so I'm not sure not everyone is going to read through it. But Brian Gottlob from Dover, New Hampshire, who runs Polycon, is a pretty well-respected economist. And so his take was exactly, you know, validated a lot of the perceptions that folks like yourself and others have, that when it comes to building, you know, 130-foot steel towers and the cable and a complicated conversion machine, that type of work really isn't part of the part of what goes on in the New Hampshire economy. It's very specialized. These types of things get built, you know, once in a generation, if they get built at all, and there's some doubt about that here.
Right.
And so it wouldn't make sense to have a labor force in place in New Hampshire sitting around and waiting for something to get built. You do have to go out of state for this type of specialized project.
I got it. Now, looking at the number of jobs, what, 533 jobs if Northern Pass were to go through, which is far less than the 1,200 or more that were projected by the project proponents.
Definitely. And I think it's important to note, and we noted this yesterday, that obviously in this environment, any job creation is not something to be dismissed. But I think what's important are two points. One, that the projected job creation, the number, is a lot smaller than what the supporters of the project are saying, which I think calls into question, you know, a lot of the facts that are out there, making sure that we really have a good basis and grounding of all of the facts. And then two, that a lot of the jobs aren't necessarily New Hampshire jobs, as Jim just went through and was obviously a big point that finding in the report. And I think those are two really important points to take away from this study.
Sure. The study was brought up, why, who funded it, and how was it conducted?
So the study was funded by the New England Power Generators Association.
Okay.
We got asked yesterday, you know, who paid for it and how much did it cost? And so certainly the, you know, that's the type of thing you don't really get into, but certainly Brian's a credible economist, and so you know, his going rate is probably what was part of the cost, but it was part of a package of his testimony that would be used in Department of Energy. But I guess the most important distinction is no ratepayer money was used in the production of the, of that study.
So. None at all. Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
And the study, do you know what factors he was looking at? You know, where the statistics came from?
Sure. Without Brian Gottlob, the economist, would do a much better job of describing this.
Okay.
But essentially what he wanted to do is not what he referred to as just a black box analysis. And a black box analysis is kind of what was done by the Northern Pass when they came up with the 1,200 jobs. And there's something called a REMI model, which economists talk about. There's a black box calculation that says if I spend this much money – how many jobs will it produce? That was kind of their first pass at it. Then they went back and developed an estimate about how many forestry jobs, and they didn't calculate how many lobbyists they would have included in the project.
There's a few of them walking around the State House.
So our analysis was different in that what it did is it compared this type of project and the jobs it created to similarly situated transmission projects around the country and then in the region. The most comparable one was a 70-mile-long billion-dollar transmission project that was built in Connecticut in the last couple of years. And by looking at that and similar projects, you could determine who are the contractors that you would typically use and what type of specialty construction workers would be involved. And then you could deduce from that what would remain for local land clearing, some utility work, that type of thing.
Well, and it makes sense because let's take a look at New Hampshire. You know, we're not in the utility, you know, transmission line development business here. You know, that's just not something that happens every day in this state. Maybe in others it is, but you know, not right now. So we just don't have those kinds of specialty labor available to us.
Yeah. And this proposed project, and we don't know if it's ever going to get built, but it's even more specialized than the typical transmission project that you see when you drive through Bedford or other parts of the state. This is going to be a direct current line, those who follow the project probably know that there's a big converter station in Quebec that turns the alternating power into direct current power. It's on giant facilities, much bigger than anything we've ever seen in New Hampshire before, and then it has to be put into another converter station, turned back into AC power in Franklin. Brian observed in his report, there are three companies in the world that specialize in this type of AC to DC conversion transmission projects.
How about that, Sandy?
Well, I think another point that's interesting is obviously the other side is starting to try to raise questions and try to poke holes in the report. And one of the things, and I haven't gone through all the news clips yet, but I've seen in the news clips, is they were talking about a project in Maine, and they said, you know, why didn't they talk about this in the study? And I think it's interesting because that project is the MPRP, the Maine Power Reliability Project, and they were kind of saying, you know, that's what you should have compared it to. But in fact, it's not. It's a very different project. It's not a DC project. It has smaller towers. It really isn't a good comparison. It's a lot smaller, and it's not building a new – it's kind of building on what is already there. And I think it's really interesting that even where they try to kind of poke holes in the study, I'm not sure what they're asking us to compare is exactly what we should be comparing with.
Well, you know, and Northern Pass already had one study blown out of the water, and that was the estimated tax benefits to the towns.
Right.
And we saw what happened in Deerfield when they started – looking into the details of the tax projections to them should the project be built. And let's put it this way, the revenue numbers were revised downward significantly.
So now we're at strike two.
Right. Yeah. are we looking at the 533 jobs that are that your study points out would be created as opposed to the 1,200? So we're talking less than 50% of the projected jobs would be created. And do we know how many of those 533 might go to New Hampshire workers? Was that looked at all?
It was. I'm trying to.
Yeah, I think there's a high and a low estimate.
Right.
And I think the low was about 11% of those jobs, and the high was 19% of those jobs.
Hmm.
Now, we took it beyond the direct employment analysis. And one of the things that Brian did do, to his credit, was also take a look at where these out-of-state workers come into New Hampshire. There's some benefit from a jobs perspective there, too, and we've included that in our analysis. So if an out-of-state worker comes in and stays at the Hampton Inn and goes to a Chinese restaurant across the street for dinner, that's going to create some impact on the economy. And that
because
we factored that into our jobs numbers as well.
Got it. Because as I'm looking at the Concord Monitor story here, they did talk about bringing in another $600,000 to $700,000 in new rooms and meals taxes, you know, from that type of scenario that you point out. But also, as that story points out, new jobs created by the project would be 0.001% of the state's overall job growth.
Right.
That's
so if you're a policymaker and you're trying to decide
spotlight.
So if you're a policymaker and trying to decide, you know, I really don't like the idea of granting eminent domain to a private developer, but boy, maybe there's some, you know, grand benefit to the economy or job creation. I think this report would give you some pause.
And this is, of course, that 0.001% would be over the course of 4 years, not just in 1 year.
Right, and not necessarily permanent jobs either. A lot of the jobs would be temporary jobs, which I think is important to keep in mind as well.
Now, one of the other questions for you, Sandy, is the New England Power Generators Association. Martin Murray likes to point out from PSNH that you're a competitor organization.
Right.
And that you have, you know, companies that would be at stake. And let's just assume that Northern Pass would be successful in getting rid of some jobs in your industries that you represent. You're looking at temporary jobs replacing the permanent jobs.
Right. I think it's – I love this. I actually think the whole kind of line of attack saying, oh, you know, you're afraid to compete. In fact, we do want to compete. And I think that our members are understand that in this environment that there is a lot of competition. Our issue is that if we're going to compete, we want it to be on a level playing field. And that's what a lot of our concerns and our position on Northern Pass is that we're opposed to it as it's proposed because we feel like the way that it's being proposed isn't a way that isn't a level playing field. And the eminent domain is a perfect example of that. Our power plants, if they want to expand at their existing site or, you know, develop a new plant, they can't do it by using eminent domain. It's clearly stated in the statute. And all that we think would be fair is that the private transmission companies, the companies that are just building a line because they want to make a profit, which they have every right to do, they can't use eminent domain. We can't use it. They can't use it. Then we're on a level playing field, and then we welcome the competition. Maybe some of our members will win. Maybe some will lose. But as long as it's done fairly, that's all we ask for.
Well, you know, that's a very good point. 1-866-823-1077. Sandy Hanequin from the New England Power Generators Association joining us. Jim Monahan from the DuPont Group joining us as well, talking about this study put forth by the New England Power Generators Association, and also Brian Gottlob, who did the study on this as well. Any other points you want to add to it?
That's really our main. I mean, I think that it's important that the study gets out there and that there is a good debate on it. I think it's good that there's a good debate on this project. I say this wearing my NEPCA hat, and also I'm a New Hampshire resident. You know, this is something that could really make a lot of changes in the landscape and in New Hampshire. Maybe that's right, maybe it's not, but let's make sure before policymakers make decisions that we have all the data and all the facts out there, and then we can make an informed policy decision.
I think the timing of this study is particularly important, looking at the eminent domain issue to be voted upon tomorrow, because I'm kind of trying to look into the future here a little bit through that little crystal ball and seeing the debate on the Senate floor and saying, well, gee, think about all the jobs that are created. We got to allow eminent domain for the common good here. And you look at these numbers right here, 0.001% of the state's overall job growth over the course of 4 years. Where is the common good in that? You know, in kicking somebody off of their land or depriving people use of their land that they have worked so hard for all their life?
And I think those are exactly the type of questions that need to be asked. And as policymakers, and I guess at this point senators, start to make their decisions before the vote tomorrow, those are some of the questions that they need to weigh. And then also just the fact of what the Constitution says, what the intent was, and just keeping that in mind and making sure that, I mean, property rights are a large issue in our state, and just making sure that those are preserved.
All right.
You know, it's, you know, when you get right down to it, the voters are actually pretty smart when it comes to this stuff. And it was just 4 or 5 years ago when they amended the Constitution to prevent the use of eminent domain for private projects. 85% of the people knew that someday something like this was going to be put in front of policymakers, and they didn't want to give them the option of saying, well, just this one time we'll let you use eminent domain. And so I think that, you know, the voters set a pretty high standard, and actually we have some confidence that, you know, the Senate is going to weigh all of that and come out on the right side of this.
Well, hopefully they will, and hopefully they'll do so by supporting the Forrester-Bragdon Amendment in particular to House Bill 648. Well, Jim and Sandy, good to see you.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting us on the show.
Thanks for coming in. And where can people, if people wanted to read the whole study? Yeah.
Our website, www.NEPCA, which stands for New England Power Generators Association.org. The study, the full study is on our website.
Okay, very good. Thanks for stopping in.